Good morning. Whether you are joining us online or here in the sanctuary, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I'm Reverend Chris Jimerson, co-lead minister here at the church. To help our service be more accessible for persons of differing visual abilities, I will tell you that I am 6 foot, late middle age, with graying brown hair, wearing a bright colored stole with a moon on my shoulder. My pronouns are he, him. It is a joy to be with you today.
And I am AJ Jaraska, a member of this church and a seminary student. I am a 5'8" tall, 39-year-old non-binary person with short, light brown hair, and I am wearing all black. My pronouns are they, them. I am thrilled to be with you also. We especially want to welcome you if you are new to the church. If you're joining us remotely, please say hello in the comments and let us know from where you are viewing the service. If you're here in person, please join us for the social hour after worship. Either way, we invite you to fill out the online visitor form at austinuu.org. Simply click on worship, which will then show you a link for the form. We would love to get to know you better.
Today, we will be examining how we as Unitarian Universalists might reclaim the Bible as an inspiration for liberal religion. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, wherever you find yourself on life's journey, whichever your pronouns, whatever your abilities or disabilities, whether you've walked in, rolled in, or joined us through virtual space, whomever you love, you are welcome here. You belong here.
We come from a long tradition of seeing a spark of the divine in every person. It's in this tradition, a living tradition, that I invite you to greet the holy among us, either in the comments or by turning to those around you. Now, let us greet the holy that lives in each of us this morning.
Good morning. I'm Margaret Borden, today's lay leader. I am 5 feet, 5 inches tall, a white woman in my 70s with very short salt and pepper hair and frameless eyeglasses. I'm wearing a white dress covered with colorful flowers. My pronouns are she, her. Please join me in the words for lighting our chalice. This flame we hold in our hearts as we strive for justice for everyone. This is the light we shine upon systems of oppression until they are no more. This is the warmth we share with one another as our struggle becomes our salvation. Our call to worship is from reading the Bible again for the first time, Taking the Bible Seriously But Not Literally, by Marcus J. Borg. Stories can be true without being literally and factually true. A metaphorical approach to the Bible thus emphasizes metaphors and their associations. Metaphors can be profoundly true, even though they are not literally true. Metaphor is poetry plus, not factuality minus.
One of the things that holds First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin together as a religious community is that we have a common religious purpose. For this church, that purpose is our mission. The congregation wrote it together, we emblazoned it on our wall, and we say it together in worship every Sunday so that we might more readily carry it in our hearts throughout the week. Let's do so now. Together, we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community.
I begin to warm and chill two objects in the fields, a ragged cup, a twisted mop, the face of Jesus in my super, the sinister dinner deals, the meal trial is wicked wheels, a hook bone rising from my food, all things good or ungood. And the mercy seat is awaiting, and I think my head is burning. Anyway, I'm yearning to be done with all this measuring of proof. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And anyway, I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. Interpret signs, a catalog, a blackened tooth, a scarlet fog. The walls are black, like bottom kind. They are the sick breath of my hind. 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 I hear stories from the chamber, how Christ was born into a manger, like some ragged stranger died upon the cross. Oh, should I say, it seems so fitting in his way. He was a carpenter by trade, or at least that's what I'm told. My good hand tattered evil crosses a brother's fist. That 55, they did nothing to resist. In heaven his throne is weight of gold, and the ark of his testament is thrown. A throne from which I'm told all history does unfold. Down here it's made of wood and wire. My body's in on fire. And God is never far away. Into that mercy seat I climb. My head is shaved, my head is white, and like the moth that tries to enter the bright eye, so I go shuffling out of life, just to hide in death a while. And anyway, I never lie. And the mercy seat is awaiting, and I think my head is burning. Anyway, I'm yearning to be done with all this measuring of truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And anyway, I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. And the mercy seat is awaiting, and I think my head is burning. Anyway, I'm yearning to be done with all this measuring of proof. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And anyway, I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. And the mercy seat is awaiting, and I think my head is burning. And I think I'm yearning to be done with all this measuring of proof. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And anyway, there was no proof. I'm afraid I told a lie.
Our reading this morning is a quote from Reverend David McFarland. The Bible is like Santa Claus and sex. Children hear about it on the playground or on the street, whether or not their parents discuss it with them. And as an adult, if you don't enjoy it and wish to abstain, you can successfully avoid it only by taking extreme measures such as total social deprivation or profound isolation. The Bible is Holy Scripture because it is the living document and foundation of many important faiths, including Unitarian Universalism. To abandon the Bible would mean alienation from one of the world's most important influences on religious thought, liberal and otherwise. Our concept of respect for the web of existence, for instance, emanates from a stream of thought that flows through the Psalms and the prophets from that same God of Genesis who declared the goodness of creation.
This is the time in our service where we center ourselves. We breathe together. And breathing together, we sense each other's loving presence. Breathing in and out, we follow our breath to a deeper place inside, a place of greater wisdom, a place where a spark of the divine resides within each of us. I invite you now to settle in your seat, noticing the contact with the chair or bench, noticing your feet on the floor. As you think about our topic today of the Bible, notice how you feel in your body, what comes up for you. Don't worry about changing it. Notice, do you feel something in your belly, in your chest? Just let it be. And then notice if there's anything that feels particularly good in your body right now. As you let yourself feel this goodness in your body, let us enter a time of sacred silence, all while remembering that we also hold sacred human sounds, including those of small children.
I invite you now to light candles if you are so moved, candles of sorrow, joy, remembrance, hope, resilience, whatever may be on your heart at this time. And as we light our candles, please hold in your heart those in our church who may be feeling sorrow or are ill, as well as those who may be experiencing joys in life. Now let us enter into a time of candle lighting and meditation, remembering at the end of our music to hold the meditative silence.
I don't believe in an interventionist God. But I know, darling, that you do. But if I did, I would kneel down and ask him. Not to intervene when it came to you. Well, not to touch a hair on your head, leave you as you are. If he felt he had to direct you, then direct you into my arms. Into my arms, oh Lord, into my arms. Oh Lord, into my arms. Oh Lord. And I don't believe in the existence of angels. Looking at you, I wonder if that's true. And if I did, I would summon them together. ask them to watch over you. We'll each kind a candle for you, make it bright, bright, pure. And to walk like Christ in grace and love and guide you into my arms. Into my arms, oh Lord. Into my arms, oh Lord. Into my arms, oh Lord. Into my arms. But I believe in love. And I know that you do too. And I believe in some kind of path. That we can walk down, me and you. So keep the candles burning, make you bright and pure. That you'll keep returning always and evermore. Into my arms, oh Lord. 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 Into my arms.
And now we light one last candle for all those for whom there is no one to light a candle. I just finished my first year of seminary, and if you had told me 5 years ago I would be in seminary, I would have been shocked. Even more so by the fact that I'm attending a Christian seminary. Once I knew I wanted to go to seminary, I decided to attend a Christian seminary in part because I knew that whether I end up being a chaplain, a parish minister, or working on social justice issues, living in Texas, or really anywhere in this country, means that I'll be exposed to Christian viewpoints and references to the Bible. The more I learn about the Bible, the more I realize that the Bible is hidden in plain sight all around us, in song lyrics, art, writing, common sayings, and so much more. There is a popular song, Turn, 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 I believe by Pete Seeger, that I heard years ago, is from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And while working on this homily, I learned that Emily Dickinson's work references the Bible. A part of me also hoped that by going to a Christian seminary, maybe I would find myself identifying as a Christian again. I grew up in a Christian church, and I missed some of the magic I found there, and the belonging in having a shared text. Being a UU can be hard in that way. When I used to play roller derby, I would often get asked, "But where is the ball?" I think the equivalent in UUism is, "Where is the central text that you all read and agree on?" As it turns out, though, even the Christians don't agree on a central text. Catholics include different books of the Bible than Protestants, so we're not all reading the same Bible. And that's even setting aside all the different translations. It took hundreds of years after Jesus' death before there was even a semblance of agreement on what books to include and the order to read them in. The books of the Bible were written in a specific time and place. As my New Testament professor says, some of what we're reading is essentially someone else's mail. Paul is writing to early Christian churches to try to guide them in how to be successful in this new endeavor, especially at a time when Christians were persecuted and there was debate over who could be included in this new church. So why should we read something written nearly 2,000 years ago that has context and meaning for a time so long in the past? Unitarian Universalist minister John Buren's answers us in his book, Understanding the Bible, An Introduction for Skeptics, Seekers, and Religious Liberals. He says, progressive people simply cede their power to opponents when they leave interpretation of our religious heritage or the meaning of our nation or authentic family values to the reactionaries, the chauvinists, and the bigots. He goes on to say that if we reject the Bible, it, quote, doesn't mean that it ever goes away. Rather, it simply means that it ends up only in the hands and on the lips of others, often reactionary others, where it can and will be used against you. Buren's is right. Louisiana just passed a law requiring public school classrooms to display the Ten Commandments. Texas tried to pass a similar bill last session, and we can bet it will be on the docket again come next year's session. We can shout about separation of church and state all we want, but the Bible isn't going to leave our political dialogue anytime soon. And while the Ten Commandments are part of the Bible, they are cherry-picked in that, according to Jewish tradition, there are actually 613 commandments or mitzvot in the Hebrew Bible, which is a better term for the Old Testament, since old makes it sound like it's back in that time, even though it's a living text for so many Jewish people. Most of these mitzvot cannot be followed for a variety of reasons, including that they require being in the temple, which was destroyed. One of the big questions in the early Christian church was whether the early Christians needed to follow the law, in other words, the commandments. The New Testament, in part, is grappling with this question, and there are different interpretations of whether the Jews and the Gentiles, who are the Christians who did not have Jewish heritage, need to follow the law. So laws to post the Ten Commandments might still get passed, but imagine if more teachers knew this context and could explain... But imagine if more teachers could explain that the Ten Commandments are just a selection of the 613 laws that one ancient group thought were appropriate for governing themselves. For all my humanist friends in the audience, I promise we haven't forgotten about you. In fact, Buren's calls himself a biblical humanist. He points out that one can have a foundation in the Bible without believing it reveals something about being supernatural. Or about the supernatural. The Bible has a lot for us to learn. I took a class on the book of Judges last semester, and I'm taking a class on Revelation in the fall. Fun fact, it's Revelation without an S at the end, not Revelations, as I know I said my whole life until this past year. Judges is one of the harsher books in the Bible, with lots of violence, including some of the most horrific violence against women in the text. Through analyzing the book, I came to learn all the ways that it can be read, including as a feminist piece, one that in talking about violence against women may in fact be speaking out against it. It can also be read as a tract against kingship, and many parts of the Bible are speaking out against empire. For example, like much of the Bible, Revelation chapter 13 was written in a way that people of the time and place would have understood, but we do not if we try to read it literally. And by the way, there is no literal, much so people would have us believe. It talks about beasts, but is in fact coded writing against the Roman Empire. This is the chapter that includes a reference to 666 or 616 in some of the manuscripts. Both of those numbers are actually codes for Emperor Nero, not a literal devil. So where do we go from here? I don't have all the answers, and I know Reverend Chris has some more to share with us as well. I don't necessarily recommend trying to sit down and read the whole Bible. I do recommend looking at a study Bible and looking up quotes that you've heard and learning how to use the footnotes and references to better understand those things. If you'd like to learn more about how to do that, I'll be teaching a workshop called Reclaiming the Bible on July 14th from 1 to 3 here in the church. We'll go over how to look up passages and the meanings behind them and use study Bibles and other reference tools. An announcement will be going out soon about that workshop if you're interested. There are also great books like John Buren's book, which is out at the table if you'd like to take a look at it, though I would like it back. I also have a few other books out there that you're welcome to look through after the service. If you want to take a deeper dive, you can audit a class at Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary or another seminary. One of my favorite professors is teaching Hebrew Bible in the spring, and it's mostly asynchronous, and you'll get to learn how much scatological humor is in the Bible, and if you don't know what scatological means, it's basically bathroom humor. The Bible that I have discovered in seminary is not the one that I was taught as a child growing up in the Christian church. It is both more violent and more poetic than the stories of Adam and Eve, Noah, and Jesus from my childhood had led me to believe. If you find yourself afraid or unsure about the Christian Bible, know that you're not alone. There are many of us who share those concerns. Also, I know that many come here with religious trauma from Christianity and the Bible. If engaging with the Bible is painful for you, please honor that. No one should have to engage with religious or spiritual practices that cause harm. But if there are things that cause harm that you're curious about, I hope you'll join me on July 14th so we can reclaim the Bible for ourselves and not just let it be a tool for fundamentalists. I'm still on my own journey when it comes to the Bible. I've discovered some verses that I really like, such as James chapter 2, which talks about how faith without works is dead, or James chapter 5, which warns rich oppressors that God sees the harm they have caused. I think those align very well with our UU values. But I have yet to draw the spiritual comfort from the Bible that I see so many others have, something a part of me wishes I had too. I'm grateful for the UU value of pluralism, which celebrates diverse theology and honors that we can draw from more than one source of spiritual wisdom. The Christian Bible is one source of spiritual wisdom, but it's not the only source, and I appreciate the opportunity to explore all these wisdom traditions in community with you all. Thank you.
Thanks, AJ. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That's the Gospel of John, chapter 3, verse 16 from the New Testament, King James Version. Don't you just love the King James language? Believeth, begotten. Some of you have heard me talk before about how I was raised as a Southern Baptist, and I told my mom that I wanted to be a minister when I was a very young child, even preached sermons into the cassette tape recorder my parents had given me. Well, one such baby sermon was based upon that Bible verse. It's amazing to me that after all these years, and after having rejected that fundamentalist religion of my childhood, I can still remember John 3:16 word for word. King James Version, no less. Here's why I think that matters. Regardless of our religious upbringing, despite a culture that has grown more and more secular over time, as AJ mentioned, the words and images and metaphors of our largely Bible-based religious history have become embedded within our cultural symbols, mythologies, values, rituals, traditions, indeed the very language with which we think and speak. And therefore, embedded within our individual subconsciouses as well. And as AJ mentioned and our reading earlier describes, the Bible is still pervasive in our society and is a large part of our Unitarian Universalist liberal religious tradition. So too, though, are those more fundamentalist interpretations of the Bible, like that of my Southern childhood, also embedded within our cultural landscape. And so, similar to AJ, part of my spiritual journey through adulthood has been to reclaim those biblical narratives that got so implanted into my formational inner psyche in ways that parallel now my evolving values and understandings of life. I have learned to reinterpret and re-embrace the sacred texts of my childhood, like that one from John 3:16. More on that shortly. Marcus J. Borg, author of our call to worship earlier, urges us to read the Bible as poetry plus rather than factuality minus. Instead of interpreting the Bible as literal and factual, we may find greater wisdom if we mine it for historical and metaphorical truths. So, if, for example, we take the well-known story of Noah and the flood, who's heard of the Noah and the Ark story? See, like Santa Claus and sex. If we take that story and, has so often been done, try to accept it as literally true, we're forced to either reject it entirely as defying rational belief, or to read it as this fantastical tale of an angry and vengeful God extinguishing almost all life on earth as retribution for the wickedness of humankind. But if we understand that historically, civilizations that predated the origins of the Noah story had similar flood mythologies, floods that were both terribly destructive, but also in some way washed clean the world and created circumstances through which new life might arise, then we might come to understand the Noah story in a quite different way, metaphorically. In the story, brothers were killing brothers, injustice prevailed, violence had grown rampant, humans were engaging in physical relations with the angels. We were filled with hubris and disregard for our fellow humans. We had moved away from love and justice. And so symbolically, the story could be viewed as humankind cleansing itself of these violations of our deepest, most life-giving and fulfilling values and rebirthing a rootedness in love and justice. God, then, becomes a profound inner calling towards those deepest values that move us toward thriving and fulfillment. And over again throughout the Bible, a literal factual approach too often leads to using the Bible to inflict a vengeful God upon people we don't like or want to dominate. But if we move instead towards this historical, metaphorical approach, then over and over again, we find story after story in the Bible that becomes a poetry of love and justice. Over and over, a calling to cleanse ourselves of greed, violence, and injustice. Over and over again, a fervent cry for living lives of love and justice. And I think if we can do it, as AJ mentioned, without causing ourselves harm, I think developing our ability to return the Bible to its poetic grounding in love and justice is vital for at least two reasons. The first is that, as already mentioned, the Bible is a fundamental part of our Unitarian Universalist heritage. If we throw it out, we lose a rich metaphorical inspiration for many of our most cherished values and concepts. The second reason, though, is that we are seeing in this country an eruption of mostly white Christian nationalism that would brandish literalistic interpretations of this sacred script to banish love and justice for all but themselves and turn our government into a white Christo-fascist patriarchy. And lest we think that is hyperbole, let's just consider that, as AJ said, Louisiana has made it mandatory to post the Ten Commandments in every classroom, and Oklahoma has just required that the Ten Commandments and indeed the entire Bible be taught in every classroom. I can only shudder at what literalistic fundamentalist take on the Bible will get taught. And I want to ask them just how they plan to teach commandments like, "Thou shalt not commit adultery," or "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant." I know I'm always telling my neighbors, "Don't you go coveting my manservant." Once again, gotta love that King James language. The editor-in-chief of Christianity Today recently told of several pastors relating to him how, after preaching about the Sermon on the Mount, several of their churchgoers complained that it was too woke. And that returns us to the Christ story encapsulated by John 3:16, with which we began. You see, my beloveds, we have to be able to counter these selectively factual fundamentalist readings of the Bible with our own metaphorical perspective proclaiming love and justice. We have to proclaim and reclaim Jesus as the preacher of that Sermon on the Mount where he declared, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, the meek, those who mourn, those who hunger, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, and those who are persecuted for righteousness." Jesus was no blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white Christian nationalist warrior. He was a dark-skinned, ultra-woke, anti-empire champion for love and justice, who turned the tables of the money changers in the temple over, expressed a preference for the poor and disenfranchised, and hung out with prostitutes, tax collectors, and the chronically unemployed, also known as his disciples. For me, John 3:16 is a poem about a love so powerful, so selfless and boundless, that we're willing to give all of ourselves, all we have begotten, to create love and justice for all in our world so that humankind may flourish and thrive. And that is our life everlasting. Amen.
Please join me in the words by which we extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again.
And now, as we go out into our world today, may we see the poetry in our lives.
May we find the holy metaphors in all of the sacred texts of our tradition.
May we encounter the sacred in all that surrounds us.
May we center ourselves in love and justice.
May the congregation say Amen.
Amen.
And blessed be.
Blessed be.
Go in peace.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.